love it. You are now tuned in to Three Black Men, a podcast by three black men where we talk about theology, culture, and the world around us. The following content may not be suitable if you ain't real enough. Listener discretion is advised, because real recognize real. Here's the hope when we look familiar.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Robert.
And I'm Trey.
Hey, and we are the three black men. We have not replaced Brother Samuel, but he is
irreplaceable.
Sick. Yes, he is sick on this day. So the spirit will have to come and be that third person with us, accompanying us, if you will.
I just want the record to reflect that right now, I'm the only of the three black men with perfect attendance. Yeah, you know it. Stand up on it. Perfect attendance this season so far.
Wow. So two things I want to address as we get into conversation today, as I bypass that. Number one, I want to acknowledge our Patreon family. Hey, y'all hold us down week after week, month after month. Y'all come through with your finances and your verbal support.
Oh,
hey, we try to give y'all extras, but what I love is that it feels generative in the sense that we have supporters that really make this podcast possible. So thank you.
And not even... Most definitely, not even just the financial support, which we definitely appreciate, but even the community in and of itself. Because one of the things about this whole podcasting situation is that we speak to each other a lot. And then there are times when we can see certain metrics and everything, but we don't really know who this is landing with or how this is landing. And that's one of those ways that we keep this a community as opposed to just a production or as opposed to just a show, as opposed to just like a platform. That Patreon community is one of the ways that that keeps us grounded in reminding us that we are doing this for like very real, tangible people. So thank y'all so much.
Yeah, I love it. And the next thing is that this will be the episode that closes Black History Month. As we started out the season, we are talking about hope. And I look forward to really thinking more through that, through different guests, through different topics. I have some funny things that are at the top of my chest, but I'm not going to say it because I'm saved on today. But but on this choice day, we are talking about the good Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock, and especially his book, The Divided Mind of the Black Church, right? So all month we've been talking about giants and the Black faith. And here we are at Raphael Warnock. So first initial thoughts on, this brother, this representative out of Georgia, this pastor, leader, what do you think of him?
I think, first and foremost, I'm glad that you gave us the out and introducing him as Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock, which is cool. Because I also, when it comes to listing honorifics, I know the reverend comes before the doctor. What confuses me, I don't know where you put the senator in there. And I'm glad, like, we could gloss over that as much as you want, because when it comes to the political arena, some other things come into play. But I don't know if it is it Reverend Dr. Senator Warnock or is it Senator Reverend Dr.?
I don't know.
Regardless, right?
They don't even say Reverend Doctor when they talk to him usually.
Talk about which, this. Exactly.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I appreciate about the Reverend Dr. Warnock when it comes to the field of theology and the work of ministry is that he approaches this in a way that acknowledges the reality of the gap between the theological academy and the practical ministry, right? That's matter of fact what this book is about. I want to say, I'm not even sure. I feel like this book is actually his doctoral dissertation.
I'm not sure. It reads like that a bit.
It does. It does. And I really appreciate that because that's one of the things that a lot of people like to gloss over or ignore that, oh, there is a difference between the academy and the church house that a lot of people struggle to acknowledge and to name and to try to bridge that gap. And in taking this on head on, like there's a lot of people like myself who have had feet in both areas at different levels or whatever, and trying to close that gap. When I do the work of theologizing bigger or whatever, I'm trying to make things plain in a way that like acknowledges the fact that, oh, there's a whole other field out here. But what do we do with the fact that the traditions that we've inherited don't necessarily always align with the scholarship that we're engaging with on a regular basis, right? And so I respect Dr. Warnock for the work that he has done in this area. And I think it's very important work that will be built upon for like generations to come. What about you, bro?
I love that Dr. Warnock shows us a different way that's possible, right? So the book that we will get into, Divided Mind of the Black Church, it's got some hard sayings in there. Jesus, this is a hard saying. And it isn't the toughest read, but it is a tougher read, right? Rather than maybe another book like maybe This Here Flesh or something, right? But he does a thorough work as he traces Black theology, and he includes gaps in Black theology too. But I like that he is an example of somebody who is trying to meet people on the actual ground, right? Like, so much of the work that I do in the academy, I try to do something similar, right? It is difficult to speak to people in the ivory tower and to speak to the real lives of Black people. And I like that he really does that, right? Like, I really admire that. It's something I was thinking
It
as
does it
you were.
well, I think.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he's a pastor of a historic Black church, right? Something I was thinking as you were talking is, especially we always have new listeners, and it might be helpful that if we locate ourselves as we talk about the Black church, right? And I can go first. I did not grow up in the Black church at all, in any meaningful way. And for those who know my story, I grew up as a Black atheist. I always got to put the Black before atheist because y'all center a lot of white atheists when y'all talk about atheism, and I don't like that. I was not a God's not dead type atheist, for those who know, the courtiness. But I always say that I was shaped by the Black church. It's amazing. When I became a Christian later in life, I didn't realize how many things from the Black church became cultural, right? Like different hymns that I didn't even know were talking about God. I knew the tune to, or different ways of being, or different ways of relating to people. So by the time I encountered like real Black church folk, it wasn't like I was the odd man out my whole life, even though I hadn't been a part of one. So that's me. And now I have a deep appreciation for the Black church, now in my 40s, that I never could have had earlier in my life. I also know about the pain that has been caused by the Black church. So I'll say that.
And as for me, I did grow up in the Black church tradition. I've never really been deeply ingrained, even as I've grown in my theological understanding and my ecumenical commitments and everything. The Black church has always been home for me. I've never been a part of any church that did not respect, honor, and participate in the Black church tradition, even as I acknowledge the diversity of that. And so there are more progressive elements of the Black church tradition, and then there are some that are virtually indistinguishable from a large majority of what we would consider conservative evangelicalism, except
And that's the divided mind part.
and that's the divided mind part, right? Because at the end of the day, the theological commitments are often the same. one of the differences you will see is that even Black churches that are more conservative will typically acknowledge the reality of the Black experience. Even if they don't reach the same conclusions, they will acknowledge that Black culture is a thing and often a valid expression of Christianity, right? And so I've been in all sorts of different Black churches, been in and around them, and you're right though, that's the divided mind part, and it's one of the reasons that this work speaks so very loudly to me. Even as somebody who came out of I graduated from a historically Black seminary, right? So these are all things that I think about and wrestle with.
It's important to note, like, jumping into the book a little bit, like, the Black church is not monolithic. When we
It's not.
speak about the Black church, there are some overarching things that we're talking about in the institution of the Black church that was born in resistance. And so, Warnock kind of starts to shine a light on that, on how the Black church emerged from slavery and the political and ideological commitments of the Black church to start off with. But one thing that he notes is that the distinct difference between white theology and Black theology. And so those are the kind of strands that he weaves throughout the book. And so talk to us about white theology and Black theology, brother. Like, what? And so somebody might say, I hear a listener in my ear, why does it have to be Black theology, though? Like, why does it
That's
even
a
have to be a color attached to theology? We know that as good Bible believing Christians, there's just Bible believing truth. That's sarcasm
right.
for those who can't recognize it. But yeah, so why?
Because at the end of the day, one of the insidious things about the field of theology is that there has always been a white theology, but because white people are typically in the driver's seat of these conversations, and because they're typically censored in these conversations, what is in reality white theology is just known as theology, right? We don't give
Or
them an
AKA
adjective.
traditional.
Traditional, right, or orthodox, or the historic Christian position, like all these different things where white people get to fly under the radar and just having their position normalized, right? Like that is the standard by which all theology is measured, and then anything that deviates from a white male Western theology is then differentiated with an adjective. And so, one of the things that happens then is that when Black people engage in the work of theology and theological speculation and treat our own experiences as a valid point for doing that, there is an impulse to correct us or to bring us back into the fold. Oh, no, you're not seeing this right. And then the response is then, no, we are. And this is why. And okay, fine. If you need us to explain why, it's because we're Black. Let's put it, well, we're Black. We're Black. That's what this is about. We're Black. And because we are honest about the fact that our full humanity is impacting the way that we are approaching this, where there are a lot of Black theologians who are like, yes, now I'm doing Black theology. And the people are like, well, no, why don't you just do regular theology? Well, when I tried, you kept telling me that I was doing it wrong. And I had to name the elephant in the room, right? That's why there is a Black theology. Now, we won't look at the work of the reformers and call it white theology, even though that's exactly what it was, even though that theology is coming at the same exact time that the concept of race is being developed largely by the church at the same time. And we'll ignore a lot of these things because the people who are driving these conversations, the people who are providing the literature that is now revered as the standard for all of these things, are white. They're not going to label themselves that, you know?
So it's important to note that, like, Black theology is addressing, the elephant in the room that you said, and it's addressing a truncated gospel that centered the needs, experiences, and desires of white imagination and white bodies, right? I love on page 75 in my book, Warnock writes, Black theology is best understood in relationship to the liberationist God talk shaped in the brush arbors of the invisible institution. lived out in the varied aggregations of Black Christians that constitute the social reality of the Black church, resident in both Black and white denominations, and activated by various liberationist efforts that culminated with the civil rights movement, right? And so I love that understanding of Black theology is almost this container for this liberationist God talk, right? And something that Black theologians, originally male and then womanist theologians, took up the mantle and took the ball way further in a lot of ways. Yeah. See you, Ebony Towns. We see you, Renita Weems, right? Like, we see these women are doing this liberationist God talk, and they're essentially saying, if the gospel that was preached in America was efficacious enough, why are we still in bondage, right? Like, why are we
right.
still, like, looking around at societal ills? Why does this look like this?
You know? Yeah. And that's really real, because at the end of the day, it is Black theology in acknowledging the reality of human shortcomings, not in the theoretical, but in the reality, right? White theology will acknowledge that we're all sinners saved by grace. Black theology is going to put a name on some of that stuff. Like, oh, this is the way that this works, and this is what saving grace would require of us. And the fact that it hasn't been done brings in, it calls into question whether or not the grace that you are celebrating is actually saving at all, right? Or are we being Black, or is the grace that you're speaking, is it just a theoretical grace? Is it just a rhetorical grace? Or is it actually saving? Yeah. Black theology gets to bring all of these things into question. And one of the things that Raphael Warnock does is he's honest about the fact that just because a Black theology exists does not mean that all Black people or all Black churches are participating, are holding, and are wrestling with this theology. It calls back to that conversation we had with Reverend Dr. Otis Moss on here a while back, where he said that there are churches with Black people and there are Black churches, right? You can go to church with a whole row, a historic Black church, even. You can go to a Black church where they got the plaque, tell you that it was built in 1873 by exactly which people, and list all the trustees, and walk down the hallways and see all of the faces of all of the Black pastors and the Black deacons that have been there for the past 150 years. You can find those buildings, and some of them will still have a theology that is almost entirely indistinguishable from the First Presbyterian Church that kicked them out 200 years ago, right?
Yeah, which I think speaks to this reality of this identity crisis in the Black church, right? Like, although it was birthed in resistance, it was birthed in liberation, it was birthed to help lift our vision higher, our gaze higher, the reality is that Black churches have been a seedbed of oppression as well, right? Which I like that Warnock doesn't shy away from, but it doesn't become that way accidentally. It's the theology that's fueling that, which is kind of what you're pointing to. Like, yeah, churches that, although historically Black, you can't tell the difference. You're like, wait, is this MAGA? You know, like, is this Black MAGA? What's happening right now? You know, we know that there is a culture of toxic masculinity in some Black church congregations, right? We know about the history of misogynoir. Resided in the halls of Black churches, right? We know about the homophobia. And so, which I love that Warnock names these things, right? And the attempts that different theologians, especially womanist theologians, have done to address those things within the church. I think about so many womanist theologians that have named rape culture as being normalized among Black communities, right? And womanist theologians have called that out, right? So speak to that divided part, right? A little bit, if you have thoughts.
I think the division
Because this should be, you would think that something that's born out of political resistance and ideological resistance would be the most freeing institution perpetually, right?
Right. And I think what comes into question there is when we are speaking about liberation, what exactly are we liberated from, right? If our imagination, if our imagination can only conceptualize the bondage of racism, then we will continue to be constrained by the logics that uphold other systems of oppression and hierarchy. So if all you can imagine, if all you can lament is the reality of racism, then liberation from racism looks like access to patriarchal power and access to the sort of homogeny that the people who once kept you away from that enjoy. If the best that liberation can look like to you is access to the levers of power that you were kept from, you will only end up reinforcing the harmful hierarchies and systems of suppression and oppression that you once lamented. And so I think the division comes in the dissonance that some of us feel, right? When we rightfully lament the obstacles and the hurdles that we are facing, sometimes what we are grating against is the fact that we find ourselves on the other side of the hurdle. Like, we don't like the side of the hurdle that we find ourselves on, and we're not as upset that we probably should be about the fact that the hurdle exists at all.
Ooh. Ooh, you preach it real good, Pastor. Go ahead.
But even to this day, when we have these discussions, right? Like, when I start having conversations about the real harm that we are doing to people in the queer community, for instance, people are like, oh, well, this is a bit different. And my question to you is why? Why? Oh, even if you believe that, like, oh, we didn't choose to be Black or whatever, I'm like, okay, now you're making assumptions about that, but let's put that to the side for a second. I'm not concerned with the choices that we're making or the righteousness or lack thereof that you're ascribing to them. What I am concerned with is the hurdles that we are literally placing there for what, at the end of the day, the people who believe that Black people had a place in society, they had biblical warrant, as shaky as we now acknowledge it as it to be, as heretical as we want to claim it to be, they went to the same, sometimes the same passages that we use to argue that women shouldn't be preaching or that gay people are or whatever. Sometimes we're going to the exact same passages and doing that. And my thing is, can we, with integrity, reread the same scriptures and passages can we reread the ones that were used to justify our subjugation to liberate ourselves while not doing the same thing for other people?
Oof.
And for me, that dissonance speaks loudly. I can't go to sleep feeling good about myself and my integrity if I'm perfectly fine rereading certain passages in a way that makes me as a Black man freer, but keeps my sisters who feel called to preach in a certain way, or keep my siblings who are attracted to people of the same gender or are identify as a different gender than they were assigned at birth or whatever. Like, I don't understand how we can be so gung-ho about this when we've seen how that has impacted us and our aunts, people who were like us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, brother, you're talking real good. And in fact, so good that here is the time where we're going to take a little break.
Oh, snap, he on it.
Now, for those who have Patreon, we're going to continue this discussion on Patreon, but we're gonna take a little break right here, and we're thinking about liberation, we're thinking about God talk. So join us after the break.
We appreciate you rocking with us for another episode of Three Black Men. Here's the part of the show where we ask a favor from you. Now, earlier I mentioned a couple of ways that you can support us by joining our community over at patreon.com/threeblackmen. We have multi-tiered support options and you can get bonus content. If you don't want to do that, you can submit a one-time contribution by finding us on PayPal at threeblackmenpodcast@gmail.com. But we ain't here to tap your pockets. Here's a few ways that you can help us out without spending a single dime. You can stop what you're doing right here, right now, and make sure that you've left us a review and a rating. Don't just give us the 5 stars. Go ahead and write out how much you love this show and tell everybody about it. Do it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you at. Make sure you leave that rating and a review, and that's going to help even more people join the fun over here. Thank you so much. I knew God loved you for some reason.